Well, it's good to be back in the South. Many of you guys know that we've been training with New Tribes Mission for what seems to be a long time. We went to the Missionary Training Center in Missouri for a year and a half, and then we moved down to Arizona for 9 months, and we just finished up that training 3 months ago. So that's where this picture was taken, was there in Arizona, just 20 miles north of Mexico. Quite a cultural experience there, but we're excited to be back here in the South. Now, not Southwest, but the Southeast, finally. So, nothing like good old Southern hospitality here. You guys know that quite a few of you already know that we're involved in mission aviation with New Tribes. Haven't gone overseas yet, but we're getting there, really close. We're heading over in November. We'll be going to Indonesia, and I'll be talking a little bit more about that. You know that I grew up in Africa. My parents, Jonathan and June Peck, they were missionaries there for 16 years. We went over there when I was only 1 year old, came back when I was 17. I grew up with mission aviation. I saw the need for it. I saw, wow, this is something really cool, a tool that God is using to help people out, to help missionaries, and I got fired up about it. I love the planes and the small grass airstrips, the challenge of it, and man, came back to the States and realized hardly anybody even knows that this exists. And of the people that know, hardly any people can do anything about it. I found out that the requirements for all sorts of mission aviation groups is that their pilots have started their training before the age of 30. So quite a few people, by the time they even hear that, wow, there's such a thing as mission aviation. Well, when they heard that, it was too late for them to even start. So the Lord pressed on my heart. It's like, man, Jamin, you know, you have this passion for serving through aviation, and I've given you the ability, are you going to serve me with it? And so it's neat to see how through the years, even though it's been a number of years, that the Lord's provided every step of the way. Because most people don't realize that it takes about 10 years from when someone decides that they want to serve as a missionary pilot to getting overseas. That's the average for everybody who goes overseas as a missionary pilot, is between 8 and 10 years. So we're right on that mark right now, getting ready to go in just a couple months. But to give you an idea of what we'll be doing and to show you a little bit about New Tribes and what the New Tribes Aviation does, I want to show you a short video here about some experiences that happened in the Philippines with some missionaries there. The reason that we have mission aviation, it's a tool, but it's to help the missionaries. That's why we're there, is to help missionaries in remote tribal locations so that they can do the work of the gospel, so they can get that out there. And we want to keep them there, whether it's providing their supplies or anything else. And you'll see in this video just how necessary mission aviation is.
My husband Danny and I were a few years in the village before we had any children. So the day we showed up with her in our arms, there were a lot of very excited ladies waiting for us to get off the plane. To be honest, I had a few fears that I had never ever thought of before. What if she gets sick here? I had to retrust the Lord for all those things in the beginning and say, Lord, we know this is your will that you have us here so that we can continue to minister here. And so I just gave it all over to him, knowing that he would guide us and give us the wisdom we needed. And I remember getting up this day and she just seemed more lethargic. We, you know, gave her some medicine to get the fever down, and the next day she was a little bit worse.
We'd been planning for weeks to fly in for the weekend to spend some time with them. And that morning, I got up, looked at weather, realized a typhoon was inbound, and we canceled the flight. So I called Danny, told him, said there was no problem.
Well, between about 12 noon and 3 o'clock, she went from being quite sick to very, very sick. She had some surgeries when she was younger. She had kidney trouble, and I thought this could be a really bad infection that we need to see to right away. And we knew we had to get her out that day. 24 hours was going to make all the difference. And I remember just having a sort of panicking feeling when I realized that. My husband Danny called our missionary pilot to ask him if it was possible to please get us out. It was an emergency. There was a typhoon coming, and the roads were washed out. We didn't have a vehicle in the tribe. The only way to get out of the village where we are was through our missionary pilot.
Well, I felt really helpless because my initial thought was, I've already decided that I'm not flying today. And I just started praying, and just evaluating the situation from the standpoint of an emergency, and just decided that I'm going to take it one step at a time. And if the Lord opens a hole, I'll go through it. If He doesn't, then I'll turn around and come home.
My stress levels were just so high. I just felt totally overwhelmed. I didn't know what to do, and I was just praying the whole time.
It looked like we had a window where I might be able to get in. So I took off, tried to go the direction that we normally go. It was socked in, no way to get through. So I turned one another way, just praying the whole way. And the Lord just opened up a corridor through the mountains.
It was a really long hour for me. I was getting so worried as she became more and more lethargic. And her fever was just skyrocketing, and I thought, we need to get out now. We really weren't sure if he wasn't going to get in that day or not. It's a wonderful sound when you're in the jungle and you're waiting for the plane and you hear that small drone getting closer and closer, and you realize he's coming, we're going to be able to get out. As he landed, though, the weather just took a terrible turn for the worse. The winds were so strong, it was raining. And we're all standing on the airstrip, and I remember the ladies were the ones that had carried Isabella to the airstrip, and they just started praying. And the pilot said, let's just get in the plane. And we got in the plane, and he said, we'll just pray.
One of the rain bands hit, and we're sitting on the end of the runway, and palm trees are just laying over, and the wind is blowing so hard.
And we sat there, and I was watching the coconut trees, and the Lord just stopped the wind. And within 5 minutes, we were in the air, and I prayed the whole way there, because I could tell she was really sick.
I can't think of too many times that I have more intensely felt that people were praying and the Lord was answering than that day.
There were a group of missionaries already waiting for us. The guest house people had our room ready. There were missionaries to drive us to the hospital. We found out that night that she had malaria, she had a UTI, she had a kidney infection. But within a few days of people all around the world praying for her and getting the right medicine, I praise the Lord that she made a full recovery, and there was nobody as happy to hear about it as those ladies in the village.
So that pilot, Josh Dalton there is his name. Now, he had to go through a lot of training to be prepared for a situation like that. It's not very comfortable. He had already decided, hey, we're not flying today. But he was prepared, even in that situation. So the preparation, that's key to aviation. We do a lot of training, which we hope we never have to use in some situations, like simulated engine failures and things like that, but we go through it anyway, so that if something happens, we are completely prepared. We're training there in McNeil, Arizona. 20 miles from the Mexican border is where the hangar was and where our home was, right there, close to the hangar, the New Tribes Aviation facility there. But this airstrip was one of the training airstrips. It was only 1 mile from the Mexican border. And let me tell you, it helps to have friends in the Border Patrol. Because one time I was flying here at this airstrip, we were practicing takeoffs and landings, and after I landed, I pulled out my phone to contact my wife because she's flight following. Flight following is checking up on us, seeing where we're at, how things are going, making sure that we're still okay, and so that they have a reference point of knowing, okay, at this point in time, he was last known at this location, in case we drop off the radar, so to speak, they know where to start looking. So we were flight following and pulled out my phone to contact her, and I realized I've got a voicemail from my friend in the Border Patrol. Went to the same chapel there. So checked the voicemail, and he says, is that you over in such and such a spot? Said, okay, I need to contact him back. So I texted him back saying, yes, that's us over here. We're flying. We're training. Don't worry. We're not doing anything that you're involved in. So while we were flying around, looked around, and we saw, oh, there's there's a Border Patrol vehicle with a trailer, horse trailer. So my friend is in horseback Border Patrol. And so sure enough, after a few more takeoffs and landings, we see him and one of his friends on horseback just going through the thick, heavy mesquite bushes. So it's like, all right, finally got to see my friend at work. Well, another few takeoffs and landings, and we look again, and we see, well, there's those two horses again with the guys on horseback, but now there's three or four people walking in between them. So next time I was on the ground, I texted him again. I said, so it looks like you've caught, you know, a few UDAs, undocumented aliens. And his reply was only two words, with drugs. That's normal in that part of the country. And that's why we have the Border Patrol there. So it was quite a cultural experience living that close to Mexico, going to the Walmart. The Walmart was right on the border, so we would have to, I would have to deal with the cashiers who only spoke Spanish. My wife didn't have any trouble with that, though, having grown up in Spain. But people would take all their groceries and take it in the cart all the way to the border crossing and then pick up their bags and then walk across, leave the grocery cart right there at the border crossing. A very different experience there than what we're used to this far north, even though we still consider this the South. It was neat, though, how the Lord worked it out during our time there in Arizona. This is my flight instructor. He had just come back from Indonesia. And, okay, all during the time that we had applied to join with New Tribes Mission, all of our training, the year and a half in Missouri, and even during the 9 months that we were in Arizona, we had been told for most all of that time, there's not a need for a pilot or mechanic in Indonesia, even though we wanted to go there. We just had a burden in our heart. Can't even describe all the reasons. We could tell you more in detail later, but can't tell you all the reasons, but we just felt, you know, the Lord had laid this on our heart to go to Indonesia. But here, New Tribes Aviation was saying, we don't have a need for a pilot or a mechanic in Indonesia. And so even when we first got to Arizona, they were saying, consider going to Papua New Guinea or to Brazil. Those are where we'd really need people. So would you pray about going to one of those two places? Well, the Lord worked it out where, first of all, he came back and he was asked to be the full-time flight instructor there for new pilots like myself going through. So that's one pilot less in Indonesia. So we were like, okay, express our desire to the people here, the leadership team, there in Arizona, the head over all of New Tribes Aviation. And so we expressed our desire to two of the three families, two of the three men in leadership there, saying, you know, we really have a heart for serving in Indonesia. And their response was still the same. It's like, that's great, but we don't have a need for a pilot there or a mechanic. Well, the third, unbeknownst to us, the third of those three gentlemen was talking to the people in Indonesia. And he was saying, you guys are going to need a pilot soon. They're like, no, we don't need a pilot. We're all set. We're fine. They're like, no, listen. You've got Darren who just came back. You have this other guy who's going to be coming back to take care of his father who has cancer, and he's going to be back indefinitely. So you're not going to have those two pilots. And then within 2 years, you're going to have another guy who's coming back to the States for a one-year furlough. So in the next 2 years, you're going to be down three pilots. So you're not going to have enough people to operate the planes that we've got there. The people in Indonesia, they were like, oh my goodness, you're right. We do need a pilot. So this guy, the third member of the aviation team, comes back to the others and he's like, we need somebody to go to Indonesia, start this process. But it needs to be somebody who's got good maintenance skills. The only one qualified right now in the shop is Jamin. The other guys are great pilots, but they don't have the maintenance experience. So would the PECs consider going to Indonesia? So isn't it so wonderful how the Lord worked that out in his perfect timing? If we had gone any earlier down to Arizona, if we had gone any earlier from North Carolina, the answer would have still been the same. Nope. Papua New Guinea or Brazil, but not Indonesia. So it's so neat to see how the Lord placed that desire in our hearts and now he's fulfilling it. Some of the training that we did there, package drops. Great application here. Package drops, throwing things out of the plane, aiming for a little X right there, and there's a little puff of the flower bomb, you might say. But that right there, the package drop, is to simulate when we can't land. We can't land at an airstrip because there is no airstrip or it's under construction. So we have to make sure that we can throw packages out of the plane. What's so difficult about that, you might ask? You're just throwing something out of the window. Well, the problem is that a lot of people have killed themselves doing this. Why? Because they throw the package out, and then the pilot's like, where's it going? You can't change where it's going after you've let go. But you can control the plane. So people, they've been distracted, they've watched, and instead they've descended down into trees, they've hit trees, or they've flown over into a mountainside. So our training was, you don't even look. You drop it, you don't even look. You focus on flying the plane. My instructor, who you saw a picture of just a few minutes ago, he told us his story where he had to deliver something to some people working on an airstrip. These missionaries, they had hired the villagers there to work on the airstrip, and his job was to deliver the paycheck. So all the paycheck for all the people working on this airstrip, he had to throw out the window. He let go of it a little bit too late, and it went flying over into the jungle. So they had to chop down and find their way, but they did eventually find it. But it wasn't his job to worry about it right then. But thankfully, it worked out in the end. And the plane was reusable. That's the main thing. Some of the other things that we did here. Next one. Short airstrips. Just went over a ravine there, landing on this one-way airstrip. It's only 900 feet long. This is shorter than an aircraft carrier. Coming up to the top of the hill, and this is the turnaround area already. I'm done. That's the end of the airstrip right up there. So I'm already turning around. If you can't even load the plane up all the way to the maximum weight that the plane can carry, because if you did that, you'd have too much momentum. You'd go off the end, which is another drop-off right there. And there's a bench off to the side there in case anybody wants to watch the show. So why do we practice on such short airstrips? 900 feet. That's at the limits of what this plane can do. This is a one-way airstrip. You can't land the other direction. You have limits on how much wind there can even be at this location. Otherwise, it's not safe to land or take off. So why do we do this? Well, it's because overseas, we're limited in runway length. I mentioned that people were working on the airstrip. Tribal people were working on an airstrip. This is all by hand. So it's made with shovels, pickaxes, and no heavy equipment. So if there's a boulder in the way, what do? Well, you can't just bulldoze it to the other side of the airstrip or somewhere, but instead you build a huge fire around it, get it real hot, and then you douse it with water. And the sudden temperature change fractures the rock, and now it's in more manageable pieces. And now you can move that boulder off. So these airstrips, they're every 10 feet is a lot of work to make an airstrip. So we're limited as far as how long we have to operate. They're nestled in between mountains and cliffs and valleys, and so that's why we had to do these practice flights, because oftentimes there's no going around. Once you get to a certain point before you touch down, you are committed to land no matter what happens after that. Whether a pig runs out on the runway, you can't add power and go around because there's mountains back there. You'd run into the mountains. You can't outclimb them. You don't have that type of performance. So you have to get it right the first time. So that's why we had to do this training. All right. This is terrain flying in the mountains. Mountain flying. Low altitude. It's not comfortable. It looks like fun, but it makes you sweat. Coming up to this little saddle. So coming in at an angle, having to turn now to the right, we come at an angle so that if something doesn't look right through that little valley, then we can turn to the left. It's not having to turn 180 degrees. Instead, it's just coming at an angle, turning back. We're safe. We're happy. But why do we do that? Why do we train down low in the mountains? I mean, there in Arizona, yeah, you can fly up high over the mountains. That's great. But what happens when there's clouds? Well, you try to come in high over the clouds, but when you get close, you can't fly in the clouds because nice, hard rocks and mountains like to hide in white, puffy things. So you avoid the white, puffy things, and you're going to be okay. You're not going to bend metal. Why can't we fly through the clouds? I mean, airlines do it here all the time, right? Here in the States? Well, that's true. And we can do it when we're getting into a larger airport. But when we're going into these remote airstrips, there's not the ground-based navigation aids to help a plane come in and land. We don't have that at these airstrips. So we have to do all of our operations visual. That means we can see the mountain, so we can avoid it. We can't rely on our instruments out there. So we come in high altitude, usually, try to get above the clouds until we get close. If there's a lot of clouds down there, we find a hole in the clouds, circle down, and then we have to pick our way through the valleys. That low altitude terrain flying was simulating, okay, there's a low cloud layer where you can't even see the tops of the mountains, so you have to go through those little saddles. That's how you'd get through from one valley to another and pick your way to the airstrip. Can you tell that's an airstrip? Right there is the runway. It goes up into the cloud here. This here is a cliff, and that's a little house off to the side. But that's the airstrip, and that's in Indonesia right there. So that's why we do all this training, because it's better to do it when there's no clouds in beautiful, sunny Arizona than trying to do it in real life where, nope, sorry, there's no chance to go around and go up and get out of it. So that's why we did all that training. But it's so neat. That was just the flight portion of the training in Arizona. There's also a lot of maintenance involved there. I mentioned that they needed somebody with good maintenance skill to go to Indonesia. And I'll get into that in just a second. But this plane, I had the opportunity of working on there in Arizona. And this plane is currently going down to Brazil. New Tribes doesn't have a plane there yet, so this plane is the one that we've gotten all ready for exporting to Brazil. There was a lot of paperwork involved in this, as well as the actual inspection there before it left. But I was able to head up this project, do the whole inspection, get it ready. And the cool thing about this is that the missionaries that this is going to support, they currently have to do a three-day trip in order to get to their villages where they're presenting the gospel and discipling new believers. 3 days. It's 1 day in a canoe downriver further than the canoe drivers usually go. Thankfully, they've got a little outboard motor on the back of the canoe, but that's one whole day with all your supplies downriver. This is in the headwaters of the Amazon, so it's not like you can get a bigger boat. You'd hit the bottom. They're not deep rivers up there. It's the very headwaters, you know, all of them small rivers coming together. So then the second day is carrying all of your supplies from one river system to another river system. And then the third day is meeting another canoe driver there, piling up all of your stuff, and then going up the river to the actual village. So 3 days just to get their supplies. The mechanic who's already down there waiting for this plane, his parents are one of those missionaries in the tribe. And they don't even come out for Christmas to see their son because it's just too difficult of a trip. There's already airstrips there. That's the cool thing, because another aviation group comes in only twice a year, and they do all their trips in this area, and then they fly back to their location, which is 1,000 miles away. Yes, Brazil is that big. So this plane is going to change all of that. Instead of those missionaries only getting their supplies and their mail 2 times a year, because those were the only times that they would get their mail, instead, this plane is going to change all that. Instead of that 3-day trip, it's only going to be about an hour and a half flight. That's why we're there, is to help these missionaries continue to do the work that God has called them to do. And, oh man, it's such a struggle right now, not just in Brazil, but even in Indonesia where we're going. It's like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Well, actually, it's what comes first, the airplane or the missionaries? Because quite a few missionaries today aren't going to certain locations because it's just too difficult to get there. Especially those with young families, young kids. They want to have the availability of a medical evacuation. Just like you saw in that movie, that short video clip. They want to be there, but they also want to be able to care for their family. Don't we all? So right now in Brazil, there's not a huge number of missionaries there, but there's a lot of people interested, and they're ready to go as soon as the plane gets there. So as soon as that gets there, oh, it's so neat. There's people who are ready to go into these remote places. Same thing over in Indonesia. There are a lot of tribes where the missionaries are ready to go. They're going to be going through the language training same time as us. And with the plane there now, and hopefully with a pilot soon, then they'll start going into these remote places too. But they haven't been there yet. Some are. There are some established villages and tribal works. And this is the actual plane that I'll be flying and maintaining. And as I mentioned before, it's so neat how the Lord worked it out, because New Tribes was looking for somebody with good maintenance ability. Well, the Lord kept delaying us when we were here in North Carolina. We expected to be training for a year, maybe two, before joining with New Tribes. It ended up being four years before we joined with New Tribes. But during that whole time, I was able to get maintenance experience. The reason it's so important for using this plane is because they're relocating this plane, and it's only going to be two pilots, us, our family, and one other pilot mechanic family. When they're on furlough, on home assignment back here in the States or wherever it is that they are, then I'm going to be solely responsible for the flight and maintenance on this plane. So they needed somebody that had that experience. So it was neat how, once again, we see the Lord coordinated it all perfectly to where he provided the experience and the timing just right so that we could go to Indonesia. Some facts about Indonesia. It's huge country. Huge country. It's the fourth most populous country in the world. It's the most populous Muslim majority country. These are some classmates of ours. Well, one of them is, and her daughter, that we went through the missionary training center with. They're already over there. They didn't have to go through the extra training for the aviation, so that's why they're already in Indonesia. But you can see that their neighbors are Muslim. All of our neighbors will be Muslim. It's a very predominant Muslim country there. Like 99% of the people in Indonesia proclaim to be Muslim. It's also very diverse ethnically. Each one of those ethnic groups has their own language. Sometimes multiple languages within an ethnic group. And so, even though we will be learning Indonesian, that doesn't mean that the people in these groups know Indonesian. That's why New Tribes missionaries are going to these remote people groups who they don't speak Indonesian. Or there may be just only one person who speaks Indonesian. And so, man, how will they hear about the gospel? The only way they'll hear is if somebody goes to them. Huge country, as I mentioned. Wider than continental United States. Where we will be located, if this thing is powerful enough, we'll be over here in the Spice Islands. Actually, in the town of Ambon, A-M-B-O-N there. It's on the island of Ambon, the town of Ambon. That's where we'll be located as far as flying. But when we're doing the language school, we'll actually be on the island of Java. Why aviation, though? Well, most of Indonesia is water. And sometimes you don't really want to travel on their little boat taxis for hours on the open water. I've heard of some people getting stranded out there and having to wait for other people to come get them because the engines died, and so they're just floating out there for hours. And weather comes up, as you can see there. So mostly water there. That means a lot of overwater flying. For me, it's interesting. Growing up in Africa, I thought, all right, mission aviation, flying over the jungles. I'm comfortable with that. What do I find out now? I'll be flying over water. A lot of water. It's like, okay, I'm going to have to get comfortable with that. A lot of volcanic islands. You know, thousands of islands there. And then it's also covered in dense jungle. And man, even when you get to the islands, if you're going inland 50, 100 miles, you know, they're big islands. I'm not just thinking little islands here. These are big islands. Even when you get there, you have to get your supplies inland. How do you do that? We think Ox carts were used a long time ago. They're still used today. And sometimes those are the only ways to get supplies in and out if you don't have the plane. That's why we're there with the plane, to provide whatever they need. We're there to transport the missionaries to and from their locations. Sometimes if the missionaries want to send their kids to boarding school, we'll be the school bus. That's how it was for me growing up. A couple years of my life, I went to school two countries away. That's the downside. The upside is, this is your school bus. It's pretty fun. We also provide medical evacuations, just like you saw in that video clip. Not just for the missionaries, but also for the tribal people. It's a testimony to them. One of the guys there in Arizona was telling about how when he was flying, this guy, it was a village person who only spoke the tribal language, didn't even speak the trade language that the pilot knew. But thankfully there was a missionary there with this tribal person so that he could translate. Well, they were flying and they get up to cruise altitude and the pilot just relaxes and he starts turning around, talking to the passengers, and this tribal guy, he gets real nervous. He's like, You tell that guy to look up there. Look where we're going. Not even realizing, you know what, we're way up here. We're above anything that could happen. But all right, for his sake, we'll look forward. So we do provide medical evacuations for the tribal people as well. But mostly what we're there for is supplying the missionaries' needs, whatever they need. Believe it or not, this plane will fly, even packed to the gills like this. But when you consider that these people are living off-grid, that means no water, no sewer, no electricity, well, they have to provide all of that themselves, don't they? So when you're doing language translation and you use your laptop, how do you charge it? Well, you have to provide your own power. Will it be a generator? If you're going to be using a generator, that means you have to fly in all the fuel. That's where we would come in. Or a less expensive route would be using solar power. That means you have to fly in all of the batteries. When you load a plane up with batteries, it doesn't look like this. It looks empty because the batteries are so heavy. These are huge batteries. It takes two people to lift one. And you put about four of those in an airplane and it's at the maximum weight. Looks empty because they're all just there on the floor, but so heavy that, yeah, man. The plane, it'll carry it, but barely. So we provide whatever the missionaries need. Solar panels, electrical wiring, water filtration, propane bottles, if they elect to use that instead of a wood fire for a stove or oven. So we're just there to make sure that they can do the work that God has called them to do. Because yes, they could live very primitively. They could. But then they'd be spending all of their time just trying to survive and not actually doing the Lord's work. So we want to make sure that they can do what God has called them to do. And we'll fly even livestock. And it's important that they be in a blanket or tied up properly. My wife and I, we were reading a missionary biography of a gentleman down in South America, and he didn't join with a aviation group. Instead, he bought his own plane and did it his own way. And it shows in how his operations went. He ended up taking a pig to market one day, and in order to do so, he had to fly the pig. Big hog, but they hog-tied its feet together, but unfortunately, its back feet got loose in the middle of the flight. So it started kicking around everywhere, and it kicked the side door open. And it ended up, part of it, hanging out of the plane. So the pilot's thinking, I don't want to lose this pig out the window or out the door, falling a couple thousand feet here. And so he's like, what do I do? You know, I can't really grab it and pull it in. He tried, but he couldn't do it. He's like, well, I'm in a plane. I'll just tip it up on its side. So he did that, but then the pig landed on top of him. So it didn't work all that great. So he said, you know, looking back on it, even though it was a funny experience looking back, he realized that he was never closer to death than in that situation. Because pigs and other animals, live animals in the cabin, they can kill you not because they attack you, but because they do things to your plane and make it crash. So it's important that they be secured properly, even if it is put into a bag. This goat has been security checked, so it's okay. But usually what we do, instead of putting a live animal in the cabin where the passengers and the pilot are, instead we put them in the cargo pod underneath the plane. So that way if anything happens and they get loose, then it's all right. They just bang around in the cargo pod and nothing bad happens. They can't damage anything there. And our instructors in Arizona, they told us, you know, remember that the loud noise of an aircraft engine does strange things to animals' minds. It just triggers something. So when you can load them up, you can start the engine, but when you apply power for takeoff, that's usually when they go crazy. As one of the guys there was saying, yep, when I was in Papua New Guinea, that happened with me with an animal in the cargo pod, and I took off, and it was going crazy, and you could feel it under your feet there just hitting the bottom of the plane in that belly pod. And he said it took about half the flight for that thing to finally calm down. But when I landed, I realized it didn't calm down. It actually kicked the door open and fell out halfway through the flight. So it's important that you secure your cargo. But what we're really excited about is, once again, it's helping the missionaries. Helping the missionaries out, what God has called them to do, and we get to be a part of supporting them in that. And in Indonesia, it's neat because there are a lot of foreign missionaries. Not just Americans. There's also people from the United Kingdom. There's people from Sweden, from Germany, from South Korea, I believe also from Australia. There are a lot of foreign missionaries that are working there in Indonesia. And it's neat that we can have a part in supporting them in that. And sometimes the best language that there will be to communicate with these foreigners is not English, but will actually be Indonesian. And you'll see why in just a second. That's also why it's so important that we learn the language and the culture very well, which is why we'll be spending a year to a year and a half just at a language school before I even start flying again. New Tribes has been working in Indonesia for many years, more than 30 years. And one of the tribal villages, the church has matured to such a wonderful point. They have such excellent discipleship going on, and that they have now gotten the desire to send out Indonesian missionaries. And these aren't just Indonesians from the big cities. These are actually tribal people who are going as missionaries to other tribes. And it's so neat because God has equipped them already with an understanding of the culture. Yes, they still have to learn a different language because going across those ethnic boundaries, there's still that language barrier as well. But they have so much of a head start on things culturally that they can understand and connect with. It's so neat to see how God has called them and has already equipped them for his work. But what's interesting, though, is that they don't have nearly as many finances as we do. Believe it or not, they live in the middle of nowhere. You know, they're an agricultural society. So when they're going as missionaries to a different location, can they just pay for a flight? Well, not really. But it's neat because New Tribes has set up a program, a subsidy program for this plane, the Quest Kodiak that I will be flying there. It's already in Indonesia. They've already got this subsidy program set up. And it's neat because we subsidize the flights so that these Indonesian missionaries, they barely have to pay anything. Yes, it costs a bit to them, but it's affordable now, and they can actually utilize this plane to go across vast distances to these other tribes. So it's so neat to have a part in this because, believe it or not, we're still going to be U.S. citizens when we're over in Indonesia. Eventually, somewhere down the road, hopefully 20, 30 years, maybe longer, will eventually come back to the United States because this is our home country. But the Indonesians, they'll be there to stay. So if we invest in them, it's more effective. We want to work ourselves out of a job. That's our goal in missions, is to get them to such a point where they continue the work by themselves. So our next step is going to Indonesia in November, going to the language school. The language school is called IMLAC, which is the Indonesian Multi-Language Acquisition Center, and that's going to be on Java there in the left. That island, the island of Java, it's about the size of Tennessee, So it gives you a perspective there of how big that is and how far away we will be going later. So we'll spend about a year, year and a half there on Java at the language school, and then we'll be going over to Ambon over here. And the tribes that we'll be working with are on Buru, this island, as well as Taliabo up there, as well as some of the churches up here. The Wana church is up here, and then there's also some other tribal works going on up in those islands in the North Moluccas. So that's where we'll be at. Romans 10:13-15 says, "Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. But how then will they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how are they to believe in him of whom they have never heard? And how are they to hear without someone preaching? And how are they to preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news." We're supporting tribal missionaries who are going into places where people have no other option, no alternative to those missionaries regarding hearing the gospel. We live in a place here in the United States where we're spoiled. We are completely spoiled. We don't just have one translation of the Bible. We have so many that we can argue over which one to use. If a commentary about the Bible wasn't written in English, it's probably been translated into English. I mean, just the other, just last Wednesday, I was reading a missionary report about people who are working with, I think it's in Spain, where they're having trouble translating stuff because there's just not enough material there to help people, to help believers grow in their faith. There's not enough commentaries. So they have to do the translation work. That's in Spanish. I mean, that's a dominant language, right? Guys, we are spoiled to be English speakers, to have so many of the resources that we do. And I think so many of us don't even realize that there are people in this world who their only chance of ever hearing the gospel is if somebody goes to them. And not just goes to them, but actually has to learn their language and culture so that they can communicate effectively. And once they've learned that, to then just lay a foundation, a groundwork about who God is in the first place, slowly chipping away at their worldview, chipping away at the fact that, listen, you guys, you fear the spirits, but you know what? God, he's the creator. He created all things. He created the spirits. He's more powerful than them. That's just the first step. And then having to go through and eventually lay the foundation of you know, justification and grace through faith. And can you imagine trying to communicate those concepts without a good grasp of a language? Really? Guys, we are spoiled. And that's why it's so neat to be able to send these Indonesian missionaries, because they at least already have the grasp of the culture. It's like they're uniquely equipped to do this work, better than we ever will be. Because believe it or not, a family of four redhead kids, we're never going to fit in Indonesia where everybody's got straight black hair. Okay? We're never going to be truly Indonesian as much as we want to be. But when we invest in those people, they're going to be there to stay. So we'd better do a very good job. You know, I don't like considering myself as one who's sent. I like to consider myself as one who's sending, because I'm just in that process. I'm just in the line of people who's, you know, supporting those guys on the front line who are doing the evangelism and the discipleship. And there's so many other people in this whole long line just to make sure that they're there. Those people are there. The people on the front lines, there's a whole support network behind them. So guys, as we pray, remember this. Pray the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. When we do this, let's not just limit ourselves to thinking about Americans or even Westerners, but when we ask, maybe ask that the Lord would continue to raise up and provide for Indonesian laborers. Or you choose the country, that the Lord would raise up those people. Guys, there are people who are better equipped at this than we are. The reason I'm doing the aviation is because God has equipped me to do that. But what are you equipped in? Especially you young people who are here tonight. What are you gifted in that you can serve the Lord with? Yes, computer programming, you can do that for the Lord too. All sorts of things you can do for the Lord. But are you using it for his glory? So guys, be praying for us as we have a lot of traveling to do, not just going overseas, but before then as well. Between now and November, we're going to be traveling all over the place. In just another week and a half, my wife and I will be going up to Ohio to get LASIK eye surgery done. There's a gentleman up there who's providing it for free for missionary pilots. It's an incredible opportunity. I won't have to worry about these things steaming up, fogging up in the humidity there. And so my wife and I are traveling up there with all of our kids, and that'll be an interesting time, juggling the four kids, you know, in a hotel and recovering from that, and then continuing our travels. But then even when we start heading over to Indonesia, it's going to be about a 28-hour flight from what we call in aviation wheels up to wheels down. That means from takeoff to in the United States to landing in Indonesia, you know, that's 28 straight hours. So that's going to be something else with the four kids once again. But it is so neat to see how the Lord is providing and has provided, worked out everything in his perfect timing. I could go into other stories about how there's a potential delay that we wouldn't be able to go until March, but just two nights ago, my wife and I got an email saying, no, actually November is going to work. They had told us to plan for November, so we sold all of our furniture in Arizona and started traveling around expecting November, and then they said, it might not be till March, but be open for November too. So they're like, what are we going to do for 6 months? Started looking around for places to stay. Nothing was working out. The Lord worked it out though. And when just two nights ago we got that email saying, it's like, nope, November's going to work. We can fit you into the language school, because there's so many people coming into that language school that it's the bottleneck right now. So many missionaries coming in. That is a praise right in itself, that there's so many missionaries that can go into Indonesia right now. I can explain more, or you can even read in our newsletter about how it works, the approved religions there in Indonesia, and how it's okay for us to say that we are missionaries there. Other people, it's not okay for them to say that they're missionaries there, because they're missionaries to the Muslims. That's not okay in the eyes of the Indonesian government, so they can't declare that they're missionaries to Indonesia. But for us going to tribes, it's okay. I can answer more questions here in just the few minutes that we have, and then we'll close in prayer. But yeah, it is an exciting time. The Lord is providing, and the Lord is doing an amazing work over in Indonesia. I'm glad to be part of it. Any questions then? Yes, sir.
What type of aircraft? Is that airplane?
That airplane is a Quest Kodiak. It's got 10 seats, a 750 horsepower engine. At maximum takeoff weight, it can get off the ground in less than 1,000 feet. Specially designed for mission work, actually. The Helio Courier fleet is being dissolved because they're so old, it's hard to find parts for them, unfortunately. That's right. That's right.
That was a great.
Yes, it was. Yes, sir. Yep.
Does the training, does the mechanic work require FAA inspection?
Does the mechanic work require FAA inspection? It requires the FAA licensing. So I've had to get my A&P mechanics license. I even got my IA, which is inspection authorization, so that I can do more of the heavy work on the aircraft. The airplane there, it's not registered as an American aircraft, though. So that's another thing to work through once we're in country, is getting licensed to work on that plane, because it is registered in Indonesia. So that's just going to be part of the process of getting prepared after all the language. And from what I've heard, I think the tests are in Indonesian as well. Yes, sir.
How frequently would you be flying?
How frequently will I be flying? Right now, because there's not that huge amount of missionaries there, because the plane hasn't been there long enough, probably only 2 to 3 times a week. But it's neat because that opens up other opportunities. To stay in the village, to help them out with other supplies. That's why I took an additional 6 months of training in Missouri on missionary technology. So that, hey, if I'm there and I've got time, if I'm not flying, I can be working on their solar electric system. And I actually know what I'm doing this time. Yeah, so, great opportunities there. Because they're relocating that plane, that means there's going to be a lot of startup work involved in that. Figuring out stuff with a hangar, with the government, and having a liaison there between. So, once again, a good grasp of not just the run-of-the-mill Indonesian, but there's also a high Indonesian, which is what you use when talking to someone who's in a position of authority or when you're preaching. It's a much more formal Indonesian as well. So thankfully we learned that. Yeah. Well, we'll go ahead and close in prayer. If there's any more questions, feel free to ask. We have a sign-up sheet and some newsletters and prayer cards in the back if you aren't already signed up. We send it out by email as well as snail mail. It's not like we spam you guys. We only send it out maybe 3 times a year. It's a lot of work to put those things out, believe it or not. But we do love hearing from you guys, and we love keeping you in touch as well. So let's go ahead and close in prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the work that you are doing around the world. We thank you that you have promised that you will build your church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. It's not that we have to carry the burden of building the church because that's your job, but you've chosen to use us. And it is such a privilege to be used by you with the gifts and abilities and desires that you've granted us. And Lord, I just thank you for fulfilling this desire in our hearts that you placed there of sending us to Indonesia, working it out in your perfect timing, and even just recently working things out so that we don't have to keep struggling to find a place to stay for 6 months, such an odd time, but instead that we can go in November and that's working out. So Lord, I just praise you for that. Praise you for these tribal missionaries who are going across tribes to other places there in Indonesia, and that we have a privilege of helping them, sending them, and encouraging them. So Lord, just equip us and use us. Lord, even here, use us because you've equipped us to know the language and the culture here in the United States. Lord, no one else is better equipped than we are, really, to reach out to this generation in this location. So use us and provide opportunities this week to be a testimony for you, to share our faith with others. We ask this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.